The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and the greatest in the world of PlayStation. This week, I thought we could take some time to really look ahead to some of the games we're most excited to play. No, I'm kidding, we have so much big PlayStation news to discuss this week. There is a lot going on. We've got a lot to talk about this week, so, you know, rather than too much of a preamble, first of all, I'm going to introduce the rest of my panel. I'm joined this week by Jada Griffin.
Hello everybody. There's nothing happening in the news, so
real quiet.
Why are we doing a podcast
for fun? We're also joined this week for all that fun by Mark Medina.
We got to talk fast, guys. I realize this light is not plugged in and it's already one bar down.
Exciting.
So it's about to get spooky if we don't get this going.
Kate, once his light goes out, our producer Kate, if you can just make him have that like masked voice thing so that he sounds like he's in witness protection, that would be ideal. We're also joined this week by the HD remaster of Matt Kim.
Yeah, video folks, I got a new webcam and it does 1080p, so I'm shinier.
Living in 2010.
Love does it. Does he have a performance mode or
is it does. Just- It does 1080p in 30 FPS, or it does, it drops down and then 60 FPS. It actually
at 360p
does
though.
Yeah.
I don't like my Mac Kim in anything less than 60 FPS.
We have a lot of news to dig into this week. I think, you know, just for transparency's sake, depending on when you're listening to it this week, we are recording before the Gran Turismo 7 State of Play, as well as what was recently announced this morning, the Ghostwire Tokyo sort of showcase presentation of new gameplay. That we do have some Ghostwire news to talk about. But both of those were recording beforehand, so anything major from those, you know, we'll catch up with next week. But as far as we know, that State of Play is just focused on GT7, so we weren't expecting any major news, and you know, we'll touch on things as they happen next week. But we have so much to discuss this week, we wanted to make sure we had time to focus on it, and that, of course, is... It has been less than a week since the latest acquisition in the world of gaming, and that changes everything. And this time it's a PlayStation one. This week, of course, you've probably seen by now if you've been following the gaming news of the week, but Sony announced that they've acquired Bungie, the former originators of Halo and the current developers of Destiny and Destiny 2, obviously, at the moment. The purchase is happening for $3.6 billion, and just to give some of the details, and Matt, I know you guys have been doing a ton of reporting, so just... run over me if I say anything incorrect, but as of right now, it's sort of a weird acquisition compared to a lot of the ones we've talked about on the show recently. They're going to be operating independently of Worldwide Studios within Sony Interactive Entertainment, so they're not necessarily a Worldwide Studios studio, but they are a now Sony-owned company. So what this means essentially is a couple things, but first of all, Destiny 2 will continue to be multi-platform. It's staying across all of its platforms. Bungie has said they're not aiming or looking to change that anytime soon. They're still planning to make future releases multi-platform as well, and not just make them Sony exclusive. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well and our thoughts on that. But in addition to that, you know, they'll be still publishing sort of their in their own ways. They'll still have this creative and independence and freedom. But the two sides have talked about it quite a bit in several interviews and things like that. And it seems like it comes down to one, Sony provides them with financial stability and resources and things that come from being owned by such a major company. Bungie has said one of the first things they're going to, you know, prioritize is hiring more people because they get to do that now under Sony's leadership. But also interest in expanding what Destiny is not just a live service game, but also into different forms of media. And we'll talk about that in a bit as well. I think the other big thing that this means for Sony, of course, is that, and we'll talk about this a lot later because we got some other details from Sony. You know, Sony is clearly trying to get into more of the multiplayer and live service space, which we've talked about over the last few weeks. And this gives them, I think, one of the most tried and tested examples of that in the industry. With Destiny, you really saw Bungie go through the ringer of, like, what can a live service game be? Kind of all of the missteps it can make, and then also the comebacks that can come with that. And so there are so many lessons learned, so much tech developed there, so much industry insight and, you know, veteran leadership and things like that, that this give Sony a leg up in building those things rather than making all those mistakes themselves. So there's, you know, I think a lot of angles to talk about and a lot of interesting things to discuss here with this. Matt, did I miss anything that feels extremely crucial to this deal?
No, that's pretty much it. You raise all the big points as well as the big, like, questions about what this means going forward. You know, like the fact that Bungie isn't a worldwide PlayStation Studios, right? But they are parallel to them, and there was a blog post by Herman Holst about, like, sharing resources between his team, which includes all of, like, the Naughty Dogs and the Insomniacs and the other ones, and then, like, sharing technology in between these two units. So they're really treating Bungie as, like, a parallel entity as opposed to a PlayStation Studios, like, team, which I think is, like, really interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating example of it, and it also follows up on something Herman had said to me in an interview last year about Deviation Games, who they're partnering with, who is not owned or not, you know, under PlayStation. Excuse me, I don't know why my voice cracked like that. But they are essentially, when they make these partnerships with third parties for these exclusives that they're publishing, they essentially get access to all of the dev tools and, you know, pipeline development things that Sony works with. And so that's a lot of resources, a lot of well-honed stuff from, you know, decades of work that suddenly a team like that has access to. And so Bungie gets access to that. Sony gets access to Bungie's tech and technology. It's a really interesting partnership, and I think has a lot of different implications to it that we can go through. But Mark, I did want to start with you because I know we've talked a little bit about, I guess, first of all, the sort of multi-platform of it all, and I know we've discussed a little bit. Obviously, they're saying as of now, plans continue to be to keep things and their next project multi-platform. But what does the future hold? What do you sort of expect from this deal? Do you anticipate that, like, you know, especially in light of the Call of Duty conversations we've had, what do you kind of think looking forward might happen in this case?
Well, first off, it's pronounced Bungie, short for Cowabungi. It's a Ninja Turtles reference.
Sure.
I gotta go. I gotta leave.
Yeah. Not a lot of people know that. It's weird. My gut reaction was, of course, Destiny 2 is going to stay multi-platform. Why wouldn't it? I think it's illegal for them to suddenly just pull it off of, like, things like Xbox, right? People have spent money on that game. So I don't think that was ever in the back of anybody's mind, but maybe it was. But my gut reaction was, well, Destiny 3 is probably going to be PlayStation. But as this news has trickled out, I'm seeing a lot less of, we bought Bungie because we want their games to be PlayStation exclusives, and more, we want Destiny, we want that property because we want to make movies and TV shows, and we want that they're, like, world-class cutscene making and stuff like that. We want to translate that to movies and stuff. And so PlayStation is looking at it more as, we own all these properties, we can help them make it better, and they can help us make it better. It's a lot like Death Stranding, right? Kojima went on, like, a road trip tour to go to the other studios to find what engine he wanted Death Stranding to run on. And it's that kind of partnership is what I'm going to see here, is them, like you said, choosing dev tools and being able to, Naughty Dog being able to maybe make their cutscenes even bigger using some of Bungie's tools, and then you know, vice versa. So it's such a different acquisition, I think, than just, you know, they're now a PlayStation studio. I also find it insane that they're saying now we get to hire more people. 900 plus people already work at Bungie. That is a huge studio. So it shows that they have gaps somewhere. That's 900 people working on a game and future games, right? It shows that they want to do more than this, especially since they said, you know, today's the first day we are going to start our journey of becoming a multimedia company. It's a big get, and I think it's a lot different than the more recent acquisitions we've seen.
Yeah. Were you going to say something?
Sorry. We can take turns. I just had one. Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, honestly, the closest Xbox acquisition I can see this to is Mojang and Minecraft, right? Yeah. Because I know, like, Destiny 2 is kind of a weird thing to compare Minecraft to, but they are both ongoing live service games with years of added on content and expansions, right? And that's Destiny 2's primary model, right? It's free to play now with paid expansions. And I think having this sort of like continuous like revenue generator is good for PlayStation in the same way that like it's better for Minecraft to be on every platform that is available on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no. 100%. And I, you know, I agree with that. That was exactly the point I was going to make. So thank you, Matt, for your HDA upgrade is just stealing my thunder.
I'm powerful now.
He's too fast.
He's too fast. His processor has increased speed. I was going to say what I'll tack on is I know some of the community are worried about like raids and other stuff being PlayStation first and coming to Xbox later. I honestly don't foresee that type of stuff happening. I do foresee some maybe like some exclusive like custom like armors or ghosts and stuff like that for your character that are like kind of Sony based maybe on PlayStation, but I don't think they're going to really separate the time releases on any of the in-game content for the next expansions and stuff. I don't personally foresee that happening.
Well, I'm reaching back, you know, like 8 years, I guess. But I feel like they did that with the first Destiny, where there weren't PlayStation exclusive, people hated
it. I think the community hated it. And I think Bungie realizes this, and I don't think they're going to, if they have a say in the matter, I don't think they're going to let Sony kind of do that. I think there may be some, like I said, there'll be some bonuses, there'll be some exclusives, there'll be some smaller early stuff to PlayStation. But I think the core big things will probably still hit both consoles at the same time.
Yeah, it's a really strange scenario because, yeah, as we were all pointing out, like, it is a SIE published thing now and not necessarily, or, you know, owned thing and not necessarily a worldwide studios published thing. But I think, like, Mark, to your point of them wanting to be this ambitious multimedia industry company that is already 900 people strong, like, that's bigger than a bunch of Sony studios combined, I think they very much are looking at Destiny, you know, I think Sony is, as a brand that they can now own the name recognition to. Like, everything is about who do you associate these brands with. And so even if people are playing Destiny on PC or on an Xbox or, you know, seeing it as a movie or seeing it as a TV show or reading a book or whatnot, it is going to have a PlayStation or a Sony logo in there, like, somewhere. It's going to be eventually tied back to the ownership of that company. And I think that one creates a fan allegiance, but also just as everyone was saying, creates a lot of revenue too. Like, a crazy amount of revenue is going to come from this, I assume.
Counselor, can I respond to Jada, please?
Yes. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, 2 minutes. I don't know about the exclusive stuff. I can imagine.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice?
One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I can picture that not happening, right? So exclusives come from marketing deals. That's not really going to be a thing, right? PlayStation is not going to have a marketing deal with Bungie. They own Bungie, right? So yep. PlayStation is obviously going to want, if they had their way, everybody would play Destiny 2 on PlayStation, of course. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it really doesn't matter for them anymore on the surface where people are playing Destiny 2. As long as they're playing Destiny 2 and people are buying skins and buying the expansions, PlayStation gets money for that. So I think that they would stray away from any sort of exclusives in favor of people just being as happy as they can with the game anywhere they play it. And that is my 2 minutes.
I appreciate it. I mean, Matt, you wrote a story about this, about how they are like, things in development right now will not be PlayStation exclusives. They are not trying to limit their player base. Even their new IP that we kind of know is in development from job listings and things like that, is not going to be platform exclusive to PlayStation. Mm-hmm. But I think, as you wrote, I'm stealing your words, there's flexibility in their wording in the Q&A where it's like, if future games in development will become PlayStation studios, those will remain multi-platform. That isn't to say this will always be the case. So yeah. Like, who knows in the future? I am sure at some point Bungie will make a game that only comes to PlayStation and PC players or something like that. I just assume that is an inevitability.
Okay. Lot to unpack. So a couple things, right? So yeah. Bungie previously once said that they told us, I believe, in an interview ahead of their 30th anniversary, that their goal is to be a multi-franchise studio by 2025, which isn't actually that far, right? So in the next 3 years, Bungie will have multiple franchises. They have one, so clearly that just means that they want another one. So the wording is currently in development games will not, future Bungie games currently in development will not be PlayStation exclusive, meaning that presumably whatever big new IP that they're currently working on that is currently in development that we know is currently in development will not be a PlayStation exclusive. Does that mean, you know, any potential IP that's not currently being worked on will be multi-platform? You know, who's to say, right? And even then, like, even if they like fully commit to like multi-platform until the end of time of Bungie, right? Like, there are other things that they can do, right? They, like, one of their other goals is to tell new stories within the Destiny universe, right? So like, don't know, a Destiny RTS, because Bungie genuinely loves RTS, right? Like, yeah, they began in that genre and they still love it. And from what I hear, Halo Wars 1 and 2 are amazing. Just people just don't play them. Mm-hmm. like, I can imagine, like, a Destiny spinoff RTS could, you know, be PlayStation exclusive, right? But another weird thing, though, is, like, Bungie spent the last 2 years aggressively being on as many platforms as possible, right? Yeah. Like, it used to be just consoles, and there was consoles and PC, but through Battle.net, and then they fought really hard to get off of Battle.net, and now they're free to play on PC, and now they're on Stadia, which I'm constantly reminded of.
Four people, like, are real happy.
Yeah, right? Like, every Stadia announcement comes with a, by the way, remember Destiny 2? You can play it on Stadia. But yeah, so it's a thing where I feel like the company, you know, sort of, like, already was on this path of aggressive everywhereness, right? And you can't just put that genie back in the bottle just because you got bought by Sony.
Aggressive expansion, to quote the Joker of The Dark Knight. Yeah, it feels like that is definitely something that has been such a clear goal for them, and it would be a shock to see Destiny, the game, you know, whether it's Destiny 2 or even Destiny 3, become PlayStation exclusive all of a sudden. I think it would just totally go against what it seems like they've been working on. And I think very clearly the fact that they are not under Worldwide Studios implies this level of freedom and independence that they're aiming for and want to sustain. And I think that's going to, again, just be mean a more of a revenue driver, more of an association with PlayStation for people who play Destiny. I think at the end of the day, it's working in those confines. But as we said, it also means Bungie can make movies and TV shows a little bit easier. PlayStation Productions is a big thing. PlayStation's been wrapping up. We have The Last of Us show, the Ghost of Tsushima movie, the Twisted Metal TV show. I think they've said there's like a dozen projects in development already within PlayStation Productions.
Don't forget about Uncharted.
Well,
best thing ever.
That one doesn't really count, but
no, it sure anyway. Doesn't.
And I want to say that very clearly because I love my boy Tom Holland. That is only because that movie has been in development hell for a decade and has nothing to do with PlayStation Productions, just to be clear. But anyway, they have all that going. Obviously, Bungie, as you said, Mark, it's like in the first couple graphs of the Bungie announcement, they want to be more than a game world. They want to be, I think they want to be a Star Wars or a Star Trek or a MCU. Like, they want Destiny to have that cultural cachet. And having a partner who makes films, not just a PlayStation, but Sony Pictures, who has a huge music arm and can probably, you know, have big artists come in to do music for the game or the world or the TV show and the movie and whatnot, to have all of this at your fingertips as part of the company you work for is probably very alluring for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a world where things like Arcane and Vox Machina exist, and they're TV shows that people are absolutely loving, and the big thing everybody keeps saying is you don't need to be a Critical Role fan to like Vox Machina. You don't have to play League to know what's going on in Arcane and enjoy it. I can imagine this world where Destiny gets a Netflix series and people are like, oh, this is weird. And they're like, no, it does not matter if you play Destiny. Like, this series is awesome.
Well, it also helps that Destiny is genuinely cool, like, lore-wise.
That's what people tell me to try to get me into it, because I'm not always the biggest multiplayer shooter fan, because I suck. But everyone's like, yeah, the way their lore is wild. And so I should probably get into Destiny now. But
has some of the best gunplay in a first-person shooter to ever exist. It is so good.
Will it make me better?
No.
Okay, then fair enough. And then, as we've said, I think the other big thing here is that Sony now, as I was saying, gets access to one of the biggest live service stories of all time, one of the biggest live service, you know, platforms that has really gone on in the world of gaming outside of the Battle Royale space, I'd say. And, you know, Sony clearly wants to be making inroads into that space. A lot of their partnerships recently have been Firewalk Studios is going to be a multiplayer game. Haven Studios is doing a game with live service stuff. We know London Studio, the Blood and Truth and Getaway devs, is making an online PS5 exclusive. Naughty Dog is working on a multiplayer game. This is obviously something PlayStation really wants to build up and care about. And we even got word overnight from a earnings call that Sony is aiming to have 10 new live service games by 2026. I feel like, I don't know about all of you, but getting the knowledge and the technology from Bungie to be able to work with or just to learn from means you probably erase years of trial and error of trying to get those things right.
Yeah. Hey, go ahead, Matt. I'll go after you.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely, right? Like, Destiny 2, absolutely a success in the live service space, right? Quality expansion, stuff like that. At the same time, there's some weirdness about Destiny 2 as a live service game, right? Like, they, like, not in this space, they're one of the few big names that, like, archives major chunks of content for some reason, which I never really understood, right? But, yeah. Destiny 2 came out in 2014, so honestly, it could just be that, but I'm not really sure. Absolutely. Like, they know how to get people hooked and into the game, and following along with, like, Destiny 2's, like, news cycle, it does feel like there is something about the studio that does, like, put out a lot of, like, apologies to the community after major updates, right? Like,
yep.
There are portions, like, I believe they finally answered the player request of, like, what is it, GLAMS, you know, being able to customize armor, but they did it in a way where, like, a couple weeks later, they're like, hey, we heard your feedback, we're going to change the way that we launch this, you know, big thing that you guys really requested. So, I don't know, like, I feel like Destiny 2 still sort of, like, stumbles at times, but, like, as a whole, it's still, like, an unqualified success in the live service space.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I think... I don't think this comes from Jason Schreier's reporting, is Anthem's big stumble was that BioWare was not allowed to look at what Destiny does, right? They and that's why that game came out in the state that it did, which proves that Destiny, that, you know, they figured it out, right? And so it kind of makes sense that Sony would just be like, yo, let's not try to copy that. Let's just buy this, because they are just so ahead of every other, like, kind of live service game like this. Look at Avengers. Avengers was nowhere near the level that Destiny 2 is. So it's a smart acquisition. It's also a weird thing to think about with their we want to launch 10 live service games by the year 26. It's such a strange thing, right? Because Game Pass is all about business, right? They're all about getting recurring revenue. It's an awesome service, but the bottom line for Xbox is recurring revenue, making sure people are paying monthly for this service. And so it's kind of funny. I know PlayStation is working on Spartacus, so they are working on their own, like, competitor for it, but it's funny that they're taking this different approach where they're like, instead of worrying about making a complete Game Pass competitor, we're going to make money this way. Because it becomes less about a competition of, you have this, so we want this. It's, you're making money, this is how we're going to make money. Yeah. And I imagine that it will pay off for them, because live service games, they do make a lot of money.
It's Daniel Ahmad, an industry analyst, put out a lot of stuff overnight of their earnings call. And of the last fiscal year, a third of the money they earned was from DLC, microtransactions, subscriptions like that. And Sony doesn't really have a thing first party that they can make money from like that on a consistent basis. So it's like, if that's a third of their revenue already through just like partnerships and, you know, third party things, imagine what that'll be if even two of those 10 games succeed. Like, not every one of them is going to be a huge thing, but it's like, if even a handful of them make it, that is a lot of revenue that can generate over time. And like, I think, you know, we say this on the show a lot sometimes, but it's like, at the end of the day, these are businesses designed to make money. We want their experiences to be good and creative and fulfilling and interesting and spark us in a way that makes us care about them, but the companies also know they need to make money to keep doing that. And so
I also think it's smart that they're going about doing it this way, because it could have been so easy for them to do a games as a service and take a franchise that we love, like a Horizon, an Uncharted, a Last of Us, Ratchet, whatever. I'll keep, you know, there's so many franchises. They could have tacked on games as a service stuff and done like a spin-off for those games. And we probably would have been like, oh, this is okay, but I really hate the games as a service model for this game. It doesn't make sense. So it makes a lot more sense for them to generate new IPs and buy one that gives them that access to making that money to keep making these amazing single player experiences and keep them kind of their own self. And I mean, R&D for games is expensive. It takes a long time to research and develop these tools and build engines and stuff for these types of things. That's another benefit they're getting from Bungie with Destiny and everything. Like, they get access to all that stuff. You said it earlier, but R&D is not cheap.
Well, and I think you made a really great point there that's worth emphasizing for people who, like, maybe don't like live service games who are listening to this or watching this. Like, Sony is not going to stop making the games that we know Sony for. They're not going to suddenly be like, well, Horizon and Last of Us and Spider-Man are all multiplayer live service free-to-play games. We might get spin-offs, kind of like what you were saying, Jada. I think whatever Factions became, if it's set in the Last of Us universe, I think might be sort of the first example of that. But they're not going to stop making the franchises we know or the types of stories they want, but those games are ridiculously expensive and aren't, you know, monthly generators of revenue in the way that a game like Destiny is or a Fortnite or a thing like that. So this allows them to have both. And like you said, they don't have to spend a decade trying to build it up and learning from all those problems, which is kind of, on the flip side, what Xbox did when they acquired so many studios with beloved storied franchises. Xbox really only had like Halo and Gears, and they were kind of in a downturn at the start of the Xbox One, you know, generation. So they just bought companies that have beloved IP, and that was a smart move because it meant they didn't have to spend a decade trying to build new things up. They just had those. And this is something similar, but on like a technology and revenue side. It's interesting to see them going about the same things in different ways.
Can I just say, like, how much that would ruin those franchises trying to do something like that? Mm-hmm. And the thought of it just makes me cringe so bad, right? Because, like, Ubisoft has been going down that road for a long time. And, you know, like, Ghost Recon Breakpoint was ruined because of microtransactions. That game launched with XP boosters, right? And I love Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but the moment you get to that vendor where he's like, my stuff changes weekly, make sure to do these challenges, I was like, oh no, like, I don't want this in my like single player type of games. And the thing is this exists, right? Fallout is one of the most beloved franchises of all time, and they tainted the name of that franchise by putting out Fallout 76. Fallout 76 is a lot better place now, right? But that is not what people wanted with Fallout, and it has found an audience. I am one of them. I have like 300 hours in that game, but like,
no, people adore it now. Yeah,
yeah. When you think of Fallout, it does have a little bit of like bad taste in your mouth because you think of Fallout 6, right? I cannot wait for something like Fallout 5 or some sort of spinoff to come out to bring that franchise back, because right now the Fallout Twitter account is just a Fallout 76 Twitter account. And that is something that I feel like is going to damage them long term when it comes to that franchise.
Well, and I think to your point about that and to what Jada was saying as well, like, this means they don't have to do that. Like, if they're making all these new live service games, they don't have to do that, but they can still introduce interesting multiplayer stuff. Like, I think part of the reason Ghost of Tsushima Legends was so well received, aside from being really, really good, is that it was a free add-on if you owned the game. There were not microtransactions with it. It was just like, here's a really cool bespoke multiplayer mode that didn't try to be more than what it was. It wasn't trying to like get you into spending money in this crazy ecosystem. Like, I would love to see more things like that from the PlayStation franchises we know. I think if they tried a Horizon thing like that, I think if they tried to, I mean, I loved Uncharted multiplayer for what it was. It was light, but it was fun. Like, I think if they tried more things like that, I'm fine with that. But this allows them to both do that, make the games we love, and also create these live service games that make a lot of money and do get people really invested in them. So it's, go ahead.
Sorry. I thought you were ending. I jumped in early. I apologize. No, I totally agree. How cool would it be to do a Horizon multiplayer where you can build up your own person from one of the different tribes, the Karja, the Nora, different types of things. And you go out and hunt monsters like a la Monster Hunter type style, where you're hunting these like giant, you know, you have these different machines that you're hunting. That would be so cool as a multiplayer added experience. And you know, there's, say what?
I was just going to say, they don't have to now charge us for every piece of armor you take off a machine.
Exactly.
They could just make a cool mode. But yeah, it's a really, really exciting potential for that, for what this means, I think, for the business of it all. But there is another, you know, wrinkle to it that I do think we absolutely need to discuss, even though obviously we've talked a lot about the show on the show about how, like, hey, the conglomeration and bundling up of the industry into just a few major players and all that consolidation can be worrying in a lot of ways, but it's going to keep happening, it seems, because Jim Ryan said, we are going to continue making purchases. Like, this is not the last one. Jim Ryan, I believe, specifically said that Sony has many more moves to make, and talked about Sony's ambitions to grow its live services and grow beyond PlayStation's, quote, historic console heartland. And I love the idea of just like a prairie where PlayStations roam free. But he said, I've been on record talking about increasing the size of the PlayStation community and expanding beyond our historic console heartland. This can take many forms, Jim Ryan said in an interview with GamesIndustry.biz, excuse me. We are starting to go multi-platform. You've seen that. We have an aggressive roadmap with live services and the opportunity to work with and particularly learn from the brilliant and talented people from Bungie. That is going to considerably accelerate the journey we find ourselves on. And so, yeah, it is. This is going to be a thing we're going to be talking about as much as I think we are reticent to see the games industry become PlayStation versus Xbox versus Tencent versus Nintendo versus the Embracer Group, I guess. They have like 500 companies. So it's like, that is a worrying future, but we know that Sony is going to keep making these moves. And I'm curious who you all think they're would make a good fit, who you think they might go for at this time. I have a few thoughts, but I also don't want to steal anyone's thunder. But Mark, I do want to start with you because you wanted to leave this as a mystery for us. You did not want to tell us your guess.
Scott overblown. We do our planning show, and I was like, I have a guess. It's not that big of a deal. And I was like, who is it? They were like, who is it? And I'm like, well, I'll talk about it on the show. And now it's this like big mystery. I think a very easy guess is that they'll try to scoop up miHoYo, just because Genshin has already been exclusive, console exclusive to PlayStation its entire existence, right? Like, there's the story of the dude who smashed his PS4 when that game got unveiled because it was like, this is a Breath of the Wild ripoff, and so he, like, that was his protest, and now the game is super popular and makes tons of money for that company and PlayStation, right? It's also on mobile and PC. So it would not surprise me if they're going the live service route. You acquire a Japanese company that's already a live service game that's already exclusive. Shuhei already plays this game.
Not to bug you, but a Chinese owned company, actually.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Shuhei's a big fan. That's my most Twitter interactions I get with him is when we is when we're talking about Genshin Impact.
Hi, Shuhei.
Also, anime is so popular, so I can imagine, you know, these characters are like super fleshed out sometimes, and they have all these cool reveals, and they have all this backstory when they get introduced. This is Hu Tao. She is the greatest character to ever exist ever. And I can imagine them trying to make some sort of Genshin Impact anime, right? Like, why wouldn't they?
100%.
Yeah.
So that is such a good guess. Like, I totally, that one went under the radar for me. Like, I didn't even think about Genshin, but that is such a smart choice.
Also a company not owned by Tencent, as far as I'm aware, so it's kind of up there. I mean, PlayStation is making a very big push in China. They are, I think, again, Daniel Amad has shown a lot of sort of, like, the PS5 launch stuff they've been doing. They're really big advertising pushes there. And Genshin has been a massive game for PlayStation. So that is, yeah, hats off to you, Mark. I really did not even consider that, and that is a really, really good pick.
I did it.
Matt, I don't know if you have one, because I know we asked you after our planning meeting if you have any guesses, but if you do.
The one that I sort of... So the one that I thought for like the longest time up until the Bungie announcement this week was that the only real studio that I feel like fits in with like PlayStation Studios mold of cinematic third person sort of like narrative driven games was Take-Two, right? Was for Rockstar specifically, right? And also the bonus of getting NBA 2K as a result, right? Along with like BioShock and a bunch of other things, but like in terms of like cinematic AAA experiences, I sort of really just sort of gravitated to Take-Two. But it's true, like they already have a bunch of studios that do that. Take-Two makes ginormous amounts of money, right? To the point where I feel like they are maybe one of the few studios that can relatively be, I mean, who knows anymore, but like they're one of the few studios that can really sit out this whole like acquisition war that's been like growing. But yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it is like miHoYo. Maybe it's something more attainable, but something like as equally like big in a sort of spot that PlayStation does not have current studios for. Right, yeah. Like they're trying to plug in gaps. So I don't know. That was my guess. Is, you know, like, oh, Rockstar game is not far removed from, you know, a Naughty Dog game at this point. But, you know, Maybe that's not what they're looking at. Maybe they're like, we already have those. We already have a Naughty Dog. We already have an Insomniac. We need something else.
No, totally. I mean, I think Take-Two is a really interesting one on both sides, especially because their recent like acquisition of Zynga has also been one of the biggest, gaming acquisitions in history. And so it's like, what do they see themselves as standing apart and not needing to be acquired? Because that's at least sort of what we got from during the EA earnings calls. EA seems to think of itself as a company that acquires other things, not a company waiting to be acquired under a bigger umbrella. So yeah, I'm curious to see where Take-Two places into all of this, especially now that they have this giant mobile arm with Zynga. But Jada, what about you? Is there anyone who really comes to mind as like you think would fit into the PlayStation group, either filling a gap or continuing along? Someone you're interested in seeing join PlayStation Studios?
So again, I'm against all this consolidation, but. Yeah. Sony did make a big purchase, I believe it was last year, when they bought Evo. They bought the Evo tournament. Sony doesn't currently have any big fighters that are made by an in-house studio. So I think if they're going to go after these kind of smaller studios that are specific to technology and style, like doing games in areas they don't have, I think we're going to see companies like an Arc System Works that does like Guilty Gear. And they did Dragon Ball FighterZ. They've got a couple other ones that I can't think of off the top of my head. But Arc System Works, I think, is primed for that kind of acquisition. Iron Galaxy Studios, which did Dive Kick, which is, if you don't know that, it's literally a fighting game where you just literally kind of dive kick to win. It's kind of interesting, very simplistic, but fun. But yeah, I think that's the route that Sony's going to go. I think they're going to go with kind of shoring up talent to fill up their to make Evo even a bigger thing. That's them. Ideally they would go after a Capcom or a Bandai Namco that has like Tekken or a Street Fighter, but I don't think those bigger companies are at a point where they need to be purchased or come under the Sony umbrella. And I think it's better for the industry if they don't. But a smaller company like an Arc System Works, I think is perfect. I think it's a perfect fit for the Sony umbrella because their games are super stylish. If I remember right, Guilty Gear Xrd, which was the previous one to Strive, was only on PlayStation and PC, if I remember right. I think it might have came to Xbox later down the road, but it was on PlayStation first for a while. But yeah, I think this is just, I think that's my pick. I think it's the way the next one that's...
Jada, I 100% agree with you. I think Arxis is primed for a takeover, right? Especially given their size. My one thing, though, is like, we know Arxis does like dev for hire work, right? Like that's how you know that they do money, because they will make a fighting game for you if you pay them, right? They made the Grand Blue Fantasy fighting game, and they're also making the Dungeons and Fighter fighting game that's coming out, right? So they will accept your contract to make you a compelling fighting game. And I kind of like that about them. Like, my idea is, like, one day I'll have enough money and I can hire Arxis to make my fighting game. And if they get bought out by Sony, I don't think that can happen anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's the worry with these things. Like Jada was saying, it's like if all of these companies get scooped up, big and small, it limits the potential variety to a certain extent. It means stability and, you know, financial backing in a really great way for companies. But it does whittle down sort of the places these things can come from. And yeah, I do think a company like that, though, makes a ton of sense. And I do think if they get bought, we will have to have Mitchell Saltzman on the show to just scream for an hour straight as well with you about that.
IGN should hire them to make the IGN Tournament Fighter. That should be a future episode of Beyond, where we do a bracket where what IGN staff can just beat the hell out of each other. Do you guys remember? I don't know if everyone's here. If everyone was here at the time, but Dornbush, you should remember when we did one of those face off things, and it was like who would win in a fight, and it was just IGN staff.
Oh my god!
It was like James Duggan versus Miranda Sanchez. Duggan's arms are the size of tree trunks, but I think Miranda was like at the top. Miranda was at the top, and like Tom Marks was super high, and I'm like, Tom Marks? Like,
oh, yeah.
I think it's because we all know Tom is hiding a rage deep within him. There is a clear...
His bow tie detaches and becomes two daggers.
Exactly, yeah. He's very clearly someone who's like ready to go to the Super Saiyan level, but is holding it for like the opportune moment.
We would play that in the carpool, and I'm like, oh, sorry, Mitchell. I just got Mitchell and, you know... someone Brandon stronger than Mitchell. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, well,
I'm blanking.
You know, I think what would be better suited for a PlayStation show than to talk about who's tougher at IGN?
Who's the toughest?
I mean, when it comes to like game skill, I think if we were doing a bracket on that, Jada, you would wipe the floor with all of us.
You said it, not me.
It's 100% my strong feeling. If we ever go toe-to-toe in a multiplayer game, I'm not expecting to win at all. I will be happy to get a point on the
board. I sure didn't. She beat me at the dodgeball game.
That is true. It's funny.
I've never played it since.
My first interaction with IGN prior to starting with the company, this was like 5-6 years ago, was in a tiki bar, and I was hanging out with some friends of IGN people. And I was in an arm wrestling contest with this person. And I was just literally, this arm wrestling contest went on for so long that I didn't end up like talking with many of the IGN people that I was hoping to like meet and network with.
That's amazing.
And I was playing around the whole time with the person I was arm wrestling, like, cause I was like drinking the whole time and just.
It was Brandon Hunt, wasn't it?
Just
anybody.
Say what?
It was Brandon Hunt, wasn't it?
Anybody say, it was a non IGN employee.
That's actually the interview process. But, you were being interviewed at the time. You have to beat Per Schneider in a and then goes on to our GM and then
arm wrestling match and then you have to do a Picross race with him to see who can solve a puzzle faster.
That was really tough.
So it's like the Street Fighter Worldwide tournament, but different events every time you go to a different person.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like that, but way more nerdy, if you can believe it.
I can, but no, I think all of that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, like Jada, to your point, it is one of those things where it's like we're talking about it because we know it's going to happen, and I think it's just sort of an inevitability at this point. I'm very, very curious to see the moves PlayStation makes in this space and in this regard, because at least so far it doesn't seem like they're interested in gobbling up the big players, but whoever knows. With, you know, I see people like Square Enix and Capcom get thrown around a ton, and obviously like PlayStation has a very close relationship with Square. I don't know if Square is a company that wants to be purchased in a case like this. You know, it's one of those interesting things where people say it, but it kind of depends where they think their money is best suited. I think Square makes a lot of sense, but I could also see PlayStation continuing to just make these exclusive partnerships with PlayStation for Final Fantasy games and for, you know, Kingdom Hearts spinoffs or things like that. I think that is just sort of the relationship there, and it seems to be working well for both sides.
The thing I always see on Twitter when Square Enix gets brought up is, I don't know anything about the financials of either company, but I always see that PlayStation wouldn't financially be in a position to make a big purchase like that. Matt, maybe you know. I have no idea.
Square Enix is, again, just really big. Right? It's like, I think I've said this last time, like Square Enix is not just games, right? Like in Japan, Square Enix owns a bunch of different like non-gaming like businesses. They own a publishing house. I believe they own like resorts around Japan, like tourism like areas. Like Square Enix is way bigger than just the people that make Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy accessories. So it's a weird purchase, and like I think the tapes around it would be weird, right? Like if they just bought Square Enix games, that would involve divesting an entire division that's like core to the company.
Yeah,
it's, I don't know, like feasible. Like I'm not a business lawyer, but knowing Square Enix and like knowing like what their earnings call look like, and it's always funny to me like reading Square Enix's like quarterly earnings, and they're always like, yeah, and our publishing firm did this move, and our merchandising arm did this much, and our like our factories that are churning out like these figurines and all sorts of other things are doing this well. And I'm just like, yeah, that's right. Square Enix is not just Final Fantasy and games, you know?
And
well, something a lot of people I don't think know about is, I don't think they do anymore. I think Sony has the publishing rights now, but in Japan, Square Enix used to publish Call of Duty, right? That's the kind of like weird thing that people don't expect is they were Call of Duty's publisher since like Call of Duty 4 up until I think very recently, and now Sony publishes it in Japan. And so it's like it's really a vast enterprise that's much bigger than we own Final Fantasy and you can just buy us and now you have that.
and that's the same thing with Konami, which I think also gets brought up a ton, where it's like Konami also does health and fitness things and runs gyms and sells water bottles and all these different, you know, corporations. I guess they could spin off their gaming companies, but one, they seem kind of interested in coming back, it seems. And so I've, you know, we've seen the reports of allegedly like Castlevania, Metal Gear, and Silent Hill from, I think, VGC reported that they're all in some sort of states of comebacks. That seems like something.
We got a new Yu-Gi-Oh!
We did, which I've heard people really like. I need to give that
a try. It's actually really good.
I miss Yu-Gi-Oh! But yeah, like that's a thing where I think Konami kind of wants to control that all still. Otherwise, they probably would have been making licensing deals a lot earlier while they just let those wonderful franchises sit for years at a time. So I don't know if they would just sell off those arms. I think a really interesting one right now, and I know it's like a news story that we'll be covering probably in the months to come, but there's that weird sort of question again of can WB Games be spun off and sold, because that was a thing that came up last year. AT&T is spinning off Warner Media again to Discovery, so there's the chance for things to be sold off again. And Jada, like to your point of Sony looking for a fighting game, Mortal Kombat
makes sense. NetherRealm, because they get NetherRealm in that.
They get NetherRealm. It would be weird if they somehow bought the whole thing and then suddenly they're publishing Marvel and DC games. That would be a very weird time for, I think, gamer brains. But it feels like a company that at least that studio in specific makes sense. But we'll obviously see what Discovery and AT&T think is the value of doing that, because that was a big thing where it was like they thought it was going to be worth it. And then Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seemed like all the reporting around how excited people were about like WB Games made AT&T go like, no, actually, we want to hold on to this. They're very lucrative. Don't take them, please.
Yeah, that one was a real, really weird, fun news day, because I think an actual WB comms person put out a statement saying that they are exploring potential spinoffs, and then no one could track that comms person. Like, different outlets were like, we've been trying to get the same statement and no one's been telling us who said this or why. And so I think it was one of those like big chaos moments where, you know, because the big news wasn't actually about WB Games, it was that AT&T was selling Warner Media to Discovery, which was the biggest thing of the day. And as us, as enthusiast press, who, you know, covered the Warner Media news, but also covered the game news, we're focusing on the small thing that I'm almost 100% certain that WB was not thinking about at the time. Like, they had bigger concerns on their minds.
Exactly. It's a weird space, and WB is going to have a big year. You know, we did just, right before the show happened, Bloomberg reported that Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, is apparently delayed till 2023. But Warner Brothers still has three big games this year with LEGO Star Wars, Gotham Knights, and Hogwarts Legacy, plus, you know, the Wonder Woman game coming up and some other stuff. So it's like, they have a pretty busy slate on their hands, presumably whatever NetherRealm's next fighter is. They have a busy slate. I don't know if they're interested in selling off all that potential profit, or they see the benefit of a quick cash changing of hands as all of these companies are trading hands too. It's weird, but I think also shows that this crazy consolidation world and acquisition world is happening not just in gaming. It is happening in movies and TV too. It's happening everywhere, and it's a weird, strange time to be covering all that stuff. I think we've, you know, joked on the show in the past weeks, but after the past couple deals, I don't wake up surprised anymore, because anything seems like it can happen.
Yeah, when the Bungie thing happened, I remember being like, oh my god, this is insane. And then I was like, oh man, we have to talk about this again? Man.
It's not as insane as the last major acquisition 2 weeks ago. That's kind of where we're at.
But it's four times as insane as the first. No, I don't know.
The math on what's crazier in the acquisition world basically gets us to a point where it's like, wow, this is just going to keep happening. And obviously, if and when Sony continues to announce acquisitions, both big and small, we'll cover them on the show. But there are a few other news stories I do want to touch on very briefly before we move on. Just as a heads up to everyone, Discord integration is finally happening with PlayStation. They announced this, I think, last year, that PlayStation had sort of invested a small bit of stock in Discord and then a minority stake, and then there would finally be PlayStation integration with Discord. So it's starting to roll out in the US. You can connect your Discord account to your PlayStation account. I think there are intentions to have some Discord integration into PlayStation, was sort of what they alluded to last year. But we're just sort of seeing the first steps of it right now. But that's happening. Go check your account. You might be able to link them and get more out of it soon, so you don't have to switch through 12 programs to talk to your friends while you play games.
Mine just popped up. I checked mine like when the story broke and it wasn't there. And I just checked Discord now. It's there. I can link it.
I should do the same.
I heard the big thing about it is that like then now because Steam already has this, it'll show your Discord friends what you're playing when it comes to PlayStation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that at all. So I will not be doing that because there's so many times we get games early and they're like, you have to like hide your account. You have to put it in offline mode. I don't want external things knowing what I'm playing and me having to like go like system wide to make sure it doesn't say that I'm playing a certain game. So
I can't let all my Discord friends know I'm playing Uncharted 5 right now. That would just be cruel. So
exactly. It's just not right. They'll lose it. Nathan Drake dies in the first minute.
Oh no!
Did you guys get a copy of Silent Hill 420 like I did, or is that?
Oh yeah, I got it came in a really nice, really big package. Yeah, there was a lot.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of accoutrements to go with it.
I didn't get those. All I got was the Sly Cooper 5.
Oh, what a bummer! What a bummer! These fake
That's
games
all I got.
Are. God, please let there be a Sly Cooper in the future. Anyway, to move on with the news, also as we were mentioning, there was a financial earnings overnight before we were recording this, and PlayStation's whole fiscal year came out. We got a lot of follow-up statements about the Bungie acquisition, their intention for further acquisitions and things like that, but we also got new numbers about the PS5 lifetime sales. It is so far, and again, just a wonderful shout out to Mark for putting all of this in the run of show while I was busy.
Hopefully I got the numbers right.
PlayStation has sold 70 gazillion PS5s is what you wrote, so I don't think.
I think my cat may have stood on my keyboard. It just says 7 and then zeros for 50 pages.
PlayStation has sold 17 million PS5s as of the end of 2021. That's better than the Wii U's lifetime sales at 13 million, but it is below their expectations for the PS5, and they have actually downgraded the plans for the year, and they're essentially saying that's due to chip shortages. It is not a, like, man, the PS5 really isn't of interest to people. They literally cannot make enough to sell them, is their problem. And PlayStation said they will hope to make it up in the future. They say they expect once these chip shortages, if they do as planned, kind of subside in the coming year or two, they do think they'll be able to make that up, but they literally cannot make enough PS5s to sell to people right now. And that is a weird place to be when it should be good news that they're selling so well and selling out, but it is like, but we could be selling more.
Yeah, it's 2022, and the fact that like finding a PS5 is still the most super difficult is super funny. I watched a TikTok the other day, and it was these people. They worked in a Walmart, and they were just like doing this like talking thing, you know how TikToks do, but they at one point you see a PS5 in the background just sitting on the shelf. I instantly went to the comments, and people are like, yeah, we don't care anything about what this video is about. Where in America is there just a PS5 on the shelf? Like, something's up, because they don't call any attention to it, nothing. You just see it just sitting on a Walmart shelf, and people are like, yeah, I don't care about this TikTok at all. Where is this happening? Where are PS5s? Because I've never seen one. I go into my Target, and I kind of always look, and there's controllers, and I almost always see an Xbox Series S. I've never seen an X or a PS5, and I live in a more rural part of California where I was able to just walk into GameStop and buy a Switch OLED, right? So it's like, it's not as insane here as when I lived in the Bay Area. But yeah, super weird that it's 2022 and you still cannot get these.
And
I wonder if they have other technology that uses these same chips that might be beneficial for them to, in the short run, like slow down production on something else and then ramp up PS5 to build that install base. Well, I'm curious if they have other technology that uses those chips.
I mean, I feel like the problem is that they're in competition with so many other companies for those chips.
Yep.
I think if they did, they probably would at this point. But no, it seems like they want to find a solution, and it literally is just kind of to wait. But Sony CFO Hiroki Totoki in the earnings call said, that the company hopes they're able to catch up from the short-term impact of these shortages, saying, quote, "We are working closely with our partner companies supplying us with components, collaborating, negotiating, and working with them closely. We hope we can make that happen, but in terms of PS5, I think it's safe to say that we will continue to have supply disruption in terms of the components globally because of the distribution problems and so on." So we can't say for sure what is exactly the demand for the next year. You know, they've revised down their sales expectations and things. But it's it's a weird time where PlayStation is doing well, but it could be doing better, and it's going to be very interesting to see what the lack of being able to get these systems out to people means, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line.
Steam Deck this month, though, baby, let's go!
So, hey, you can play God of War on the go, finally.
Yay, Vita 2 is out.
Give me a Vita 2, damn it.
This is it.
I know, it basically is. But yeah, we with those sales numbers, yeah, it's something that unfortunately we are still going to probably see PS5 shortages. Obviously, and luckily for us, you know, some of the big games we're going to be talking about this year, Horizon, God of War, are cross-platform. And so PS4 players are not going to be left out a lot of the discussions going forward into the year. There's obviously going to be a lot to talk about. We will talk about those PS5 exclusives as they come up. But know that we are not, you know, suddenly leaving the PS4 community behind as this happens. But it's an interesting time for that. And, you know, we are going to see, speaking of PS5 exclusives, I mentioned the Suicide Squad delay. Ghostwire Tokyo got its release date leaked twice, I think it's fair to say, in the last week, unfortunately. But that's coming March 25th. That is a PS5 exclusive, also coming to PC. There's going to be, as I said, a showcase for it later this week, so you can see some of the gameplay and whatnot. But its release date kind of got leaked in like the YouTube description for that.
March. Same day as Tiny Tina.
Oh, yeah. God, we're going to be busy at March.
I'm kind of surprised it's coming so... I'm surprised and not surprised we're getting it so early. Like, I felt like it's been so, like, nebulous with, like, the information they've given us on it. Like, I feel like it's... I've only seen the one... Maybe two trailers. And, like, it's out in a month. Like, a month and a half, basically, at this point. And it's just kind of crazy to me. It blows my mind. But I'm looking forward to it. It looks really just weird. And I love weird games.
Yeah. It's one that I really dig the like tone and vibe and style that they went with the Evil Within. Mm-hmm. This looks very different from that, but also still weird and spooky and out there. And I hope it's really good. I hope it's an exciting one for us to have. But yeah, February is massive. March is now getting busier. The first half of this year, I tweeted about it, but for PlayStation, you know, between PS4 and PS5 with release dates, the Uncharted Legacy of Thieves collection, Horizon, Sifu, now Ghostwire Tokyo, Gran Turismo 7, Forspoken, and that's just in the first, like, 6 months. So, it's a busy year. We're going to have a lot to talk about. It's really, really fun and exciting. But moving on from there, in terms of other potential things to make these next month or two busy, Mark, I did want to bring this one up because I know you had spotted it. The Cyberpunk 2077 PS5 version sort of maybe got leaked on the PlayStation Store coming in February or March.
Yeah, it's just something that happened. There's new key art that they didn't intend to show. I know they're eventually... What the leaks have been that this is basically a soft reboot for the game. It's going to be called Cyberpunk 2077 Samurai Edition. It's going to have a new HUD. It's going to have all these new changes, right? I think the game will largely be mostly the same, but that they're eventually going to do some sort of, like, you know, CD Projekt Red live stream to unveil and soft reboot the game. I would imagine that's going to happen sooner than later. Like, The Witcher is also imminent this year, but they are feeling a lot more pressure to do Cyberpunk first, because rumors are is that when they announce Samurai Edition, they're also going to be announcing the first DLC pack at the same time.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for that game and the comeback, and I'm excited to try it and see what the next-gen version plays like. I definitely put it aside after a couple hours and hope, you know, I guess more than a year on, almost close to a year and a half, it might be worth jumping back into in that case on consoles. But yeah, along with that, just as a heads up, apparently also GTA 5 we're still expecting for PS5 in March. So, you know, if you're looking for big open world games you may have missed in the last decade, two of them are coming next month, apparently. That's weird.
Yep.
Moving on from there, just as I mentioned earlier, London Studio confirmed they're working on a PS5 online exclusive. We don't have other details than that, but another studio, I really loved Blood and Truth in VR. I hope they still do some PSVR stuff, but exciting to see a new project from them. It's been a while, and I hope it's something really cool. But other than that, I also just wanted to briefly mention, apparently more spin-offs are coming from Final Fantasy VII. And Jada, I mostly just wanted to ask you, are you afraid we're never going to get Remake Part 2?
No, I think we're gonna. I think we're good. They're gonna announce Remake Part 2 this year. I think we're getting an announcement that it's gonna drop next year in 2023. That's my prediction. We're getting Part 2 in 2023. I just hope we get a Vincent intermission DLC like we did with Yuffie, and I just want it to be the entire Dirge of Cerberus game from the PS2 remade.
Just a small ask.
I just want that entire game remade into an intermission, like 4 to 5 chapter experience for Vincent that leads up to where you find him in Final Fantasy VII.
What if that is just part two? What if part two is just part two?
I mean, I'm totally fine if it's just all Vincent all the time. That's totally good with me.
Knowing Kingdom Hearts, that feels like such a Nomura thing to do, where part two would actually not be a continuation of part one, and then it ends with them meeting up, and part three is all a continuation of part one. That, God, that might happen.
But the thing is, we know we... If you finish the intermission DLC for Remake, you have a really good idea of where they're going to start Remake Chapter 2, which town that it's going to start at, because it looks like it's going to start in a very specific town that I won't spoil, because if you haven't finished the intermission DLC, go finish it, because the end cutscene is amazing. It is one of the best cutscenes in the entire game and DLC.
I've finished the DLC, but I never played Final Fantasy VII, so I have no idea what the town is. Should be fun for me. Moving on from there, though, I did want to spend some time to talk about what we're playing, or at least what some of us are playing, because Jada, you've been playing a little bit of the biggest release of this week in February as we get through Dying Light 2. Stay Human is the subtitle?
Yeah, I think it's just Dying Light 2, but yeah, like the Stay Human, I think it's just kind of like their tagline.
I can't tell if it's like a Ghostbusters... Answer the Call, like when the Ghostbusters reboot added Answer the Call at the end because they wanted to differentiate it. I don't know. Anyway, Dying Light 2, you've played a bit of it. Obviously, we have a review up on IGN, not done by you, but you've gotten, I think, the most time of it of anyone on the show. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
The cover says Stay Human. I didn't want our entire comment section to be like, no, what is it?
Yeah,
I think
that is
the name of it. Sorry, go
it
ahead.
Might be. No, I think it's I think it's a little bit of both. It's a tagline. It's a subtitle. Because like the whole thing about it, like, you know, similar to the first Dying Light, you're infected. So you're trying to stay human is kind of the whole point of the game. I'm about probably like 10 hours or so in. Haven't been able to test out the co-op because I think that just went live this morning with a patch. So I'm excited to see what that kind of looks like, because the single player has been kind of like... the story's kind of, it is what it is. I do like some of the characters. The parkour is the best it's ever been. I felt like the first time when I was playing the first Dying Light, there were so many times where I jumped to a ledge and he just wouldn't grab the ledge. And I would just like plummet. You know, my nickname in Dying Light 1 was Jada Iron Ankles Griffin, because I would fall so fast and like, you know, sometimes I'd survive, most times I wouldn't. But Dying Light 2, I haven't really had that issue at all, which is really great. They changed up the stamina meter, so you can't just like kind of attack nonstop like you could. Like in the first one, you could just kick for days to keep the zombies back. Now kicking takes a huge chunk of your stamina, and you have to upgrade your stamina a lot more as you go through it. But I think probably my favorite part is, because you are infected, you have a time limit for time you can stay outside of the sun. So anytime you're not feeling those UV lights from the sun or a UV light in the game, you have this little timer, and it just kind of dictates how long you can stay. So it's like, there's been multiple buildings I've gone through that are like 3 or 4 floors, and I only have 5 minutes right now with like 3 or 4 upgrades. And so I'm just like, okay, how many more of these people can I kill and loot before I need to run and get out or use an item to refill my immunity? So it's very kind of
it's almost it's like a sim, like a life simulator thing where you need to keep track of your, you know, hunger and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit got that little bit of the survival element to it. But yeah, it's just the minute to minute during the night sequences and when you're diving between buildings is it's very exhilarating is the word. Like there's so many times it's like, oh, I really want to go lockpick this chest, but I have like 40 seconds until I have to find a UV light or use an item. So I do not have time to lockpick this chest, which sometimes if it's a hard chest, that could take 20, 30 seconds to lockpick on its own. And your timer does not stop while you're lockpicking. So keep moving. I'm liking it so far. I'm really excited to see what the co-op looks like and how it feels in co-op.
Does that feel too restrictive as a mechanic? Just because from like I get anxious with mechanics like that sometimes and wonder if it would be a worry, or does it feel like you can still get a decent chunk of stuff?
Oh, I still manage to get through almost everything. There's a good supply of items. If you're if you're helping like the different people in the world, sometimes they'll give you immunity boosters, which will restore like 80% of your immunity. So like I have like 6 or 7 of those in my inventory. So if I get really low, like I just pop one of those and I add 4 or 5 minutes back to my timer, which is really nice. So I don't feel like it's too restricted. I think it's actually walking the line perfectly right now. And it's only going to get better as you get further in the game, because as you level up, your immunity levels raise. So you get more time. So it'll be interesting. It'll just depend on how deeper the later dungeons, not dungeons, but like missions and stuff that you have to go into the darkness and for longer periods of time are balanced.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they keep that balance up, because you would assume they'd still want there to be like tension to that mechanic 20 or 30 hours in. But if you're super powerful, is there a point to it at that point? I'll be curious to see. But the full review is up on IGN for those who are interested in reading it as well. I guess a somewhat of a warning, though, Jada, I think you said you haven't had as huge an experience. There seem to be quite a few bugs that are getting addressed in release patches, but apparently pre-launch there have been quite a few. But you haven't had as buggy an experience, I think, as our review.
No, honestly, I've besides a few like NPCs clipping into each other and into me, it's been pretty much for the most part fine. I haven't had any game crashes. I haven't had any like weird load screens or anything like that. I was looking through like the list of bugs and I was like, I haven't seen any of this, so I'm like just fingers crossed that I'm never gonna see any of this. Who knows, we'll see. Time to tell.
So Mitchell, I've been in my Slack group with a few people that have been playing, and I do know one of our other editors, Mitchell, he lost his save, and now that the day one patch is out, he just slacked and said like it did not fix it. Like his PlayStation save is just done after 30 hours. He's just locked. And then one of our guide editors and one of the other people on our gameplay team, they both got stuck somewhere where the game was soft locked, right? Where it wasn't frozen, but they were stuck. So I guess what our guide writer did was, he's like, I'm not going to lose my 30 hours. It's Brendan Graber, so we all know he's a little, he's dedicated. And I guess something happened where he swam back to the island where he like put him outside of the world, and he just swam back, but then now the zombies don't know if it's daytime or nighttime.
I've had a couple instances where the zombies, I go up to like do a takedown on somebody from behind, and there's no prompt for it, and then I walk in front of the zombie and like the meter for like aggression fills up, but then they just stand there like they're there but they're not there. They're like ghost zombies. So it's kind of weird. I've had that bug a few times. But overall,
less hopefully bugs people for me, thankfully see less of this now that the game is released.
Hopefully.
I saw Techland posted on Twitter because retail copies got out into the wild. And they were like begging people like, hey, please do not play this game till Friday, till the day one patch gets here, because we've been doing so much to fix a lot of things that we don't want to ruin the experience for you. Which is kind of sad that, we have to wait on a day one patch for these types of things in gaming nowadays, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that's a strange one, but maybe.
Well, we have to wait. Nobody else does.
If you're looking to pick it up, maybe see how the patches do with it just to be safe before you jump in. Because often patches sometimes need patches when they're addressing a lot of bugs. But good to know about that one. Haven't had a chance to jump in, but hey, at least February is light, so maybe I can try to stay human throughout the rest of the month.
Nice.
Not a chance. not a chance.
I think that's all we can really talk about for the moment that we're playing. I thank you, Jada, for your input on it. And I did want to mention before we go, because I realize we haven't gotten any in a while. If you have any questions for us or want to send in any questions or topics that you want to hear on the show, please write in to beyond@ign.com. I know I use that for memory card, and please send in memory card stories as well as if you'd like. But definitely would love to answer some listener questions here or there when we can. So please feel free to send those in beyond@ign.com and we'll read them on the show. But I think with timing and everything, that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode. Before we go, did want to mention wonderful family member of Beyond, Max Scoville, has been doing a wonderful series of videos. Kitbash Creatures, I think, is the name of the series as a whole.
That's it.
That's
it. To make sure I didn't botch it, even though I wrote it down. But they're a really, really awesome series of things. If you don't follow Max on his like personal accounts, he is incredible at like model building and creating kits and creating unique ones. He'll often take sort of like a standard Jeep or something and turn it into a Dragon Ball vehicle just totally unexpectedly. He's really, really great with that stuff. And so he's been designing things based on popular gaming franchises and such, and so he recently did one on Bloodborne that was really, really cool. You should absolutely go check it out. It's of the terrible spider who I have not yet fought, but I hear is a wonderful fight. Absolutely just top tier. Everyone loves the spider, absolutely. But no, you should go check that out. Max has been doing really, really cool work with those. They're on IGN. They're on IGN's YouTube channel. Go check them out. They're really awesome to see. Other than that, Matt, I'll start with you. Anything you want to plug?
I'm working very hard on a thing that I hope everyone will see soon. It'll be very cool.
Mark, same or?
Yeah, like we can't talk about a lot of the stuff we're doing right now. So
fair enough.
See y'all in like 2 weeks.
And then Jada, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the week where we'll have a First Friday?
Yes, Friday? We will have First Friday on Instagram. It's our IGN AMA. So I will have, everybody here will be answering a question. Matt. I'm just calling him out. I guess he hasn't done one yet. But anyways, yes. I'm just kidding with you.
No,
yeah,
I want to.
Yeah,
I just
no, I know. We are all so busy. I totally don't hold it against anybody who hasn't contributed or helped or answered a question. There's so many questions and there's so much stuff that we're all doing, especially with how busy February is. February is the busiest month of the year somehow.
It's the November of 2022.
It is. It's weird. But yeah, so we'll have that on Instagram. So submit your questions when that goes live Friday morning, and we will try to answer as many of those as possible.
Awesome. And then either by the time this episode is going live or shortly after, I'll have an op-ed kind of about Sony's Bungie acquisition and things in that realm. So go check that out. Please go read that. Put a lot of words into my Charlie Day-esque Pepe Sylvia conspiracy theory about what Sony's been up to for the past few years. So please go check that out. But otherwise, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Podcast Beyond. We air normally every Wednesday. You can find us on YouTube. .com/IGN Games. I almost forgot how URLs work for a second. Sure. We're on all the podcast platforms out there in the blogosphere, as the kids say. Please, if you're enjoying the show, give it a like or the stars or whatever the platform tells you is a sign that you appreciate us. We appreciate you as well and your time for tuning in. But that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Jada is at Jada_Rena. Mark is at Mark_Medina. And Matt is at Law of TD. Matt, you got to put in underscore.
I got to change mine. I realized that.
I got to do all underscores.
Yep.
But otherwise, thank you so much to the three of you for joining me for this episode. Thank you to Kate, our producer, for making it happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching as my voice goes away. We hope you're doing well and we hope you're staying safe. And as always, Beyond.
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 Above.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.